Dear listener, this story is going to be a challenge. There is going to be talk of rape, sexual abuse, and domestic violence, and also the circumstances surrounding the death of a child. So take that into consideration. Thanks.
The state of Texas wants to kill me. Every day I ask God why.
From Futuro Media and PRX, it's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Today, the state of Texas versus Melissa Lucio, the first Latina to be put on death row in Texas, and the efforts to stop her scheduled execution next month. It's early February. A group of protesters is standing on the sidewalk outside the Cameron County Courthouse in Brownsville in South Texas. Back in 2008, Melissa Elizabeth Lucio was brought here, and what happened inside this building forever changed the lives of the Lucio family.
We're here for Melissa.
Stop the execution. Listen to the community. Listen to the people.
The people gathered here today are holding black signs with white lettering. They read, "Free Melissa Lucio."
Free Melissa Lucio!
They're also carrying a banner with a huge photo of Melissa on it. She's in an off-white prison uniform. Melissa looks tired. The wrinkles on her face are distinct. Her dark brown hair is slicked back into a ponytail. Her brown eyes are staring straight ahead.
She is an innocent woman. She's not guilty of the death of my baby sister, Mariah Elizabeth Alvarez. No, she is not.
That's John Vincent Lucio, live streaming the protest on his phone. He's the eldest son of Melissa's 14 children. Melissa, who today is 53 years old, is scheduled to die because of the death of her 2-year-old daughter, Mariah Alvarez. 15 years ago, on the evening of February 17th, 2007, paramedics were called to Melissa's home because her baby girl was unresponsive. Later, Mariah would be pronounced dead at the hospital. Her body was found covered in bruises.
My mother is innocent. I wouldn't be traveling over 800 miles Friday, Saturday, and Sunday to go visit my mother, which takes me about 8 hours to get there just to see her for 2 hours. I would not be doing that for her today if she wasn't innocent. She is an innocent woman.
As if in mourning, John is dressed in all black. His shirt is another sign. On the front, it says, "Free Melissa Lucio." He has a shaved head and tattoos that run along both of his arms. He's 32 years old, and his mom has been on death row for almost half of his life. Now, he's worried he might lose her forever. On April 27th, Melissa Lucio could become the first Latina to be executed by the state of Texas in 160 years. John and others are out here today trying to raise awareness about Melissa's story. Their ultimate goal is to save her life before they run out of time.
I will be here to fight for her life until the end.
John and so many others close to this case still have questions about Melissa's trial. In theory, the court system should only punish people who have had a fair trial and when there's no reasonable doubt of guilt. For Melissa's supporters, that is not her case.
I mean, I'm going to be honest. I would not sugarcoat anything. My mother, yes, she was a drug abuser. Yes, she was neglectful towards us, but never was she abusive towards us. She loved us dearly. She never did hurt us.
In fact, in 2019, the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals also showed skepticism about the fairness of Melissa's case and opened the door to the possibility of a new trial. Shortly after, though, the court backtracked on its own decision, placing Melissa even closer to being executed. Latino USA producer Reynaldo Leaños Jr. is going to pick up the rest of the story from here.
Watch the film! It's around lunchtime, and the protest outside of the Cameron County Courthouse that John is at has been going on now for about half an hour. Suddenly, a man in a business suit walks out of the concrete building.
That was my mother's lawyer right there.
Give a comment, Mr. Gilman. What are you going to say?
He knows what he did. He knows exactly what he did.
Peter Gilman was Melissa Lucio's first defense attorney back in 2007. And John is still pretty upset with the way he handled his mom's case. The year after Melissa's conviction, Gilman joined the DA's office, the same office that has been fighting to keep Melissa on death row. Today, Gilman is an assistant district attorney in Cameron County. John follows him down the block a few steps, but the lawyer just ignores him. A little later, another familiar person steps out of the courthouse. This time, it's Luis V. Sáenz, the current district attorney for the county. He also played a key role in Melissa's trial. He was the judge who arraigned her and set a $2 million bond for her.
You were her judge, Luis Sáenz. You know who this woman is. You know the corruption that took place.
Like Gilman, Sáenz also ignores John. This is the first time John has seen these men in person in almost 15 years. Back then, John was just a teenager. Today, he's a husband and works as a barber in the Rio Grande Valley.
It's sad. It's sad because, I mean, they're not trying to help an innocent woman on death row.
There are a lot of twists and turns in Melissa Lucio's story, and we're going to get into most of them today, including a political corruption scandal. But let's start with the documentary that premiered in 2020, the film protesters kept chanting about.
Watch the film! Watch the film!
It's called The State of Texas versus Melissa, and it's a deep dive investigation into her case.
I've lost 12 years without my children. Some of them have memories of me, and some of them don't. It's been very hard to wake up each morning and not hear them.
What you just heard is one of Melissa's interviews from that documentary. Sabrina Van Tassel, a French-American journalist and filmmaker, directed it.
I really did not know much about her case, apart from the fact that, you know, she was there because she supposedly had killed her daughter. It was supposedly a horrific child abuse case. And that was pretty much it.
Sabrina tried to find out more. So in 2017, she got in contact with Melissa's family, and she has kept in touch with them ever since.
Immediately, when I met her sister, she said to me, it was an accident, you know, and Melissa, she was never violent to, you know, with any of her children.
Backing Melissa's sister is the fact that Melissa had no documented history of being violent, not towards her kids or towards anyone. But life wasn't perfect for Melissa and her children either. In 2004, Child Protective Services, or CPS, took her kids away, following reports of parental neglect. Melissa was using drugs, and for a while, they were homeless. 2 years later, though, after securing an apartment, going to substance abuse counseling and parenting courses, Melissa was reunited with 9 of her underage children, including Mariah, the youngest. After meeting with Melissa's family, Sabrina went to see Melissa herself on death row.
I met Melissa the next day, and everything in me, like every single cell in my body, was telling me this just cannot be. I don't believe it. You know, there's just much more to this story.
Sabrina began digging deeper.
I mean, I basically read everything. I read every court record, just all the CPS files, the trials, everything, all the appeals, and discovered that not only is there not one single witness in this case, she just got sentenced to death solely because of her coerced confession.
Today's date is 2/18/2007. It is 3 a.m. We are here at the Harlingen Police Department. I am here with Melissa Lucio. My name is Victor Escalante.
That's a clip of the interrogation that Sabrina just referenced. The video, which she included in her documentary, was the core of the prosecution's case against Melissa.
You know something is wrong.
No, sir, I don't.
You know something is wrong.
No, sir, I don't.
If I bring you all those pictures, if I beat you half to death, like that little child was beat, I bet you you'd die too.
Sir, I did not beat my daughter, sir.
No?
Not that cruel to my children.
What are all those bruises on your little child?
Melissa was taken into custody just hours after the death of Mariah.
The police take this extremely vulnerable woman and begin to interrogate her the night that her toddler daughter died. And they continue to interrogate her using techniques that are known to be coercive, that are known to be unreliable. They gaslight her. They lie to her.
That's federal public defender T-Vone Shardle. In 2018, he was appointed to Melissa's case. In the video of her interrogation, you can see Melissa slouched over. She's quiet, just answering when questioned. No attorneys present on her behalf.
This is your chance to set it straight, because right now it looks like capital murder. Right now it looks like you're a cold-blooded killer. Now, are you a cold-blooded killer?
No, I'm not.
Or were you a frustrated mother who just took it out on her?
Melissa told the officers that Mariah fell down the stairs 2 days prior, but they didn't believe her. They continued to push her to admit that she had beaten Mariah to death. A little past 1 a.m., after 3 hours of being pressed with no food, no sleep, and several weeks pregnant, Melissa gave in.
Okay, Melissa. I'll just give in.
What did I say? I'm responsible for it.
Okay.
Melissa said, "I'm responsible for it." The ranger then pushed her even further.
And this is just what, spanking?
Mm-hmm.
Around her calf area?
Mm-hmm.
What's that from?
It's spanking.
After going back and forth for more than an hour, Melissa accepts she hit Mariah in several of the places where Mariah's body had bruises, but she insists that she didn't kill her daughter.
And what happened? What led to her death? Just she hit her in the hand?
No, I don't know how she died. I don't know.
Did you suffocate her?
No.
Melissa.
No, I didn't.
We're doing so good.
No, I didn't, sir. I would never do that. No.
Okay. Well, what caused her to die?
I don't know.
Other than just, you know, hitting her.
I don't know.
The entire interrogation lasted more than 5 hours. A little after 3 a.m., the ranger asked Melissa one final question.
What's going through your head?
No, she was maybe not hurt.
In the eyes of the prosecution, Melissa had confessed to murder, and they ran with that. On top of being subject to a very forceful interrogation with no legal counsel by her side, T'Vone, her current lawyer, believes Melissa took responsibility for Mariah's bruises because she's been through a lot.
The state had to find some way to pin this child's death on somebody. And what they did was they selected a vulnerable person, Melissa Lucio, who is a survivor of childhood sexual abuse.
She had two adult men in her life who were victimizing her regularly starting at the age of 6.
That's Sandra Babcock, a professor at Cornell Law School in New York. She specializes in cases of women facing the death penalty around the world and has been advocating for Melissa.
She's raped again at the age of 9 by a stranger in her apartment building. And then after she marries at age 16, she enters into a violent and abusive partnership with a man who ultimately threatens to kill her. Her second partner, who, by the way, was only given a 4-year sentence compared to Melissa's death sentence, he is somebody who beat her regularly. He controlled her movements. He raped her repeatedly. He would pin her against the wall. The children had to intervene to stop the violence. This is the kind of repeated violence that causes a person to suffer from post-traumatic stress disorder. And that's why Melissa herself became mentally ill and developed these symptoms of numbing and dissociation that helped her to cope.
The police interpreted Melissa's behavior as that of a cold-blooded murderer. For Sandra, Tivone, and others, it was PTSD. Likewise, an independent social worker who reviewed Melissa's history of abuse and the taped interrogation on behalf of the defense identified a pattern of behavior in Melissa, which made her more likely to cave in to male figures of authority. Melissa was charged with, quote, intentionally and knowingly causing Mariah's death by, and I quote again, striking, shaking, or throwing her. Before facing trial, she was offered a 30-year prison sentence if she pleaded guilty, but Melissa turned it down, insisting that she didn't kill her daughter. When the trial began a year later, not only was the recorded interrogation of Melissa presented as evidence, Tivone says,
this ranger who questioned Melissa was then allowed to testify for the prosecution that he could tell by her demeanor, by the way her shoulders were slumped, by the way her head was bowed, by the expression on her face that she was lying when she claimed that she hadn't beaten Mariah.
The ranger was not a trained psychologist. Melissa's defense tried to present the testimony of the independent social worker who had over 20 years in clinical training and experience in human behavior to explain why Melissa would have taken responsibility for something that she didn't do. But Tivone says the judge ruled that the social worker was, quote, not qualified to testify. Then, he says, Melissa's defense tried to present the expert opinion of an independent psychologist who also reviewed the video.
And he actually comes to the same conclusion that she is a battered woman, a survivor of traumatic abuse, and that what you're seeing on this video is a woman who is dissociating, a woman who has post-traumatic stress disorder, and is really just trying to survive this interrogation and is not, in fact, trying to hide anything or isn't necessarily trying to hide anything. At that point, the judge says, all of this evidence is irrelevant.
On July 8 of 2008, after a trial that lasted 1 week, Melissa was found guilty of capital murder. 2 days later, she was sentenced to death.
What's extraordinary about this case is how gendered it is, how stereotypes related to her gender and ethnicity were used against her.
The prosecution dismissed the evidence of Melissa's abuse. They essentially encouraged the jury to think that she was making it all up. And they belittled her for her experiences of sexual abuse and domestic violence, and said in the closing argument that her failure to cry was indication that she was cold-hearted and that she didn't have any remorse. And if you think about it, and you ask yourself this question, would a prosecutor ever say that a man who didn't cry was cold-hearted? And the answer is no, because this is something that you only ask of women, because women are the ones who are expected to cry. Men aren't expected to cry.
Coming up on Latino USA, we continue to examine Melissa's trial, and later we'll hear from Melissa's family and how this case has devastated their lives. Stay with us. No te vayas. We're back. And just a reminder, there might be some triggering stuff coming up. You heard about the case of Melissa Lucio, a woman who was sentenced to death in 2008 after her 2-year-old daughter, Mariah, died. John Lucio, Melissa's son, and others are doing everything they can to stop Melissa's execution. Now we're going to dive deeper into some of the things that Melissa's defense says went wrong with her case. And we're going to hear from Melissa's family. Latino USA producer Reynaldo Leaños Jr. picks up the story from here.
It's mid-February, and I'm speaking with Sabrina Van Tassel, the director of the documentary about Melissa Lucio. We're at Melissa's mom's home in Harlingen, Texas. Sabrina is here with members of the Lucio family, coordinating a statewide media tour to try to get Melissa's execution date withdrawn. The day before, Sabrina met with Melissa at the Mountain View Prison Unit in Gainesville, which is about an 8-hour drive north from here.
It was really more joyful than I thought it would be, just because we were happy to be together and we kind of detached ourselves about where we were, you know, just being separated by that huge glass. And we talked also about very intimate things. I asked her, for example, you know, who was the love of your life? She asked me things about myself too. So it was interesting.
Sabrina spent 4 hours with Melissa. They spoke via a handset, separated from one another by a glass wall.
She wants to fight till the end. She wants to fight for justice. She wants to fight for her children. And also, you know, for Mariah, she wants her life and her fight to help others. Because she realizes that it's all political and that you do not end up on death row unless you're poor or a person of color and you've been, in a way, misrepresented.
When she left the prison, some of the same questions she had when she first met Melissa still loomed over her head.
How could you set an execution date when there are so many question marks all over a case?
Yeah, that's her right there. That's Mariah, and that's actually whenever she was in the foster home, and it was her birthday.
This is John Lucio, Melissa's son, who we heard from at the beginning of the episode. I visited him in his home in Harlingen in early March. He showed me a few family photos he had hanging on the wall.
So she was happy. She was very happy.
In the photograph we're looking at, you can see a chubby toddler. She's sitting on a large, dark brown leather chair, and in front of her, there's a big pink and yellow cake that says, "Happy Birthday, Mariah." John gets emotional talking about this. He says he was close with his baby sister.
Mariah, we just locked in, like we got so attached, and she loved me. She really did. She would come to me and she would get excited when she would see me.
When we spoke, John had also just recently come back from visiting his mom. He had gone with 2 of his siblings.
My mother hadn't seen her children, 3 at the same time, in a long time. So, I mean, the last time she probably had that was back in 2008 when she was still here in Cameron County. So it was very amazing. It was beautiful. She loved it. I mean, we had a bunch of laughter, a bunch of joking around, and it was just so amazing. I'll do whatever I can to see a smile on my mother's face.
As we heard earlier from John, he acknowledges that his mom was not perfect. She used drugs and she was neglectful. They were also very poor and sometimes they didn't even have water. But there was also the other side of Melissa.
Her cooking was amazing. She cooked breakfast, lunch, and dinner, especially on the weekends, like when we're not at school. And she makes full course meals. I'm talking about homemade tortillas. My mother was a woman too. After breakfast, clean. After lunch, clean. After dinner, clean. So, I mean, even though we come from a family of poverty and we were like the lowest of the lowest, coming into our house or where we lived at in the projects or whatever we lived at, you smelled the scent of a clean house. She was a wonderful mother. She was a loving mother. She was a caring mother. I mean, she did whatever she had to do for us.
John was just 17 when his baby sister died. But even then, he had some questions about his mother's legal defense.
Why didn't they use us? Why, especially my younger siblings, that seen what happened?
He's referencing the fact that back in 2008, two of his younger siblings said to a CPS social worker that they saw Mariah falling down the stairs, just as Melissa had told the officers who interrogated her. This was captured in video.
I saw some pictures of her, and she had a lot of scratches on her face, and she had bruises everywhere. So I wanted to know if you knew about those, how she got those.
I don't know if she got bruises or anything.
Did you ever see them, though?
Well, I saw one bruise when she fell down the steps.
Where did she have it? Where did you see it?
I think there was one on her eye. Mm-hmm. I think on her arm, too.
The woman and Melissa's son are in a small room with light blue walls. They're sitting at opposite ends of a white table.
Do you feel safe now?
Well, now? No.
How come?
Because I'm with my mommy and my daddy.
Then, that same woman from CPS talks to another of Melissa's children.
Do you know why you came to talk to me today?
I don't know.
Has anything happened?
Mariah died.
Who's Mariah? Has she had any accidents or had anything happen to her or anything like that?
She fell down some steps.
And did you see her fall or did somebody tell you that that's what had happened to her?
I saw.
Peter Gilman, Melissa's first lawyer, did not call Melissa's children to testify, and the videos were never presented to the jury.
Certainly the eyewitness account of seeing Mariah fall down the stairs 2 days earlier, exactly as Melissa told the police, that would have been highly relevant since the state's case was that there was no fall down the stairs and rather that the child had been beaten and that's what caused her head injury.
That's Tavone again. He says there was also other evidence that could have shown a different source for Mariah's bruises.
An independent forensic pathologist who examined the autopsy records after the trial concluded that those bruises were very likely the result of a vascular condition that happens to people like Mariah who are dying from a head injury.
It's a condition called malignant cerebral edema. When children suffer a head trauma, the brain swells and doesn't get enough oxygen, which causes tissue damage and blood clotting, and can lead to bruising all over the body. But Tavone says Melissa's case wasn't impacted only by what went on inside of the courtroom. A few months before Melissa's trial, a man convicted of murder was released on bond by the Cameron County District Attorney's Office. That man fled and remained a fugitive for several years. Then, the same DA's office, led at the time by Armando Villalobos, took a special interest in Melissa's case.
So Villalobos had a reason to try to shore up his reputation after this murderer had escaped custody. He needs to make a showing that he is actually really tough on crime and not participating in it. He's also seeking re-election at around this time. So he decides he's going to put the first Latina on death row in Texas. He personally appeared at trial, examined witnesses, made argument, especially to get the death penalty in the penalty phase. That was his particular concern.
But in 2013, 5 years after Melissa was sentenced, Villalobos faced his own trial. He was accused of bribery and extortion, including accepting $80,000 to let that man who was convicted of murder walk free. Villalobos was found guilty and is now serving a 13-year prison sentence.
What struck me about him was the number of cases where he personally came in and took over.
That's Michael J. Wynn, former assistant U.S. attorney and the lead prosecutor against Armando Villalobos. Wynn was interviewed in Sabrina's documentary.
A case involving potential abuse of a child, alleged sexual misconduct. Those are the cases that Mr. Villalobos would take on try to put his face in front as the crusader for justice.
Villalobos' conviction cast a shadow on Melissa's case and several others he oversaw during his tenure at the DA's office.
There are several cases where Mr. Villalobos has put people on death row. And yes, every single one of those cases should be examined.
One last thing about Villalobos. After Melissa's trial, her first defense attorney went to work with him.
It's an absurd case in which to seek the death penalty. It can almost certainly be explained only by the political circumstances and the corruption of Armando Villalobos. The death penalty is supposed to be reserved for the worst of the worst. That's what the Supreme Court says. So it's absurd that the state is still pursuing the death penalty against Melissa, in particular because before the trial, the state offered her a guilty plea that would have had her serving a 30-year sentence. So they know that Melissa Lucio is not a danger to society in prison or anywhere else.
Briefly, the court seemed inclined to give Melissa another chance. In 2019, the U.S. Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals found that Melissa was not given a fair chance to defend herself. And according to an article published in the UCLA Law Review, Melissa was only the second person on death row in more than 150 cases to whom the court granted this relief since 2000. However, the state of Texas appealed the decision. Melissa fought back, but after a year and a half living with the illusion of a new trial, in 2021, the courts once again sided with the state. After the latest setback, all hopes were in the Supreme Court, but it declined to hear the case. And now, according to her defense, there aren't many legal options left for Melissa.
It's hard to wake up every morning in this same old, ugly cage. It's hard to move ahead when the clock is running slow. It's hard to have so many questions with answers I don't know. It's hard to think I'm smart when I lost everything so fast. It's hard to think about the future when I'm still stuck in the past. It's hard to build our love when my family is so far. It's hard to forget about the mistakes when they've left so many scars. With everything being so hard, you think I just give up. But the only thing about being in the bottom is that the only way is up.
Earlier this year, the state of Texas scheduled Melissa to die on April 27. In a statement to Latino USA, the Cameron County District Attorney, Luis Saenz, said that his office could not comment on the case because there's pending litigation. He did say, though, that his office, quote, stands with the citizens of our county and its jurors, and we remember 2-year-old Mariah Alvarez, whose abuse and death at the hands of her mother remain the heart of this litigation. Sabrina, the filmmaker of Melissa's documentary, sees the case very differently.
She was a white male with money. She would not be where she's at right now. She's where she's at because she's poor. She is a Hispanic mom with too many children. And she's a life that does not matter. And her life did not matter to these people.
Here's Melissa's attorney again.
You generally do not see the death penalty meted out to people who have good representation. The death penalty is not for the worst crime. It's for the worst lawyering.
Since 1989, at least 70 women in the United States have been exonerated for murders that they did not commit. That's according to the National Registry of Exonerations. In almost half of those cases, no crime was ever committed. For Sandra Babcock, who we heard from earlier, the state of Texas got it wrong with Melissa.
If Texas executes Melissa Lucio, it will be a crime and a mistake that Texas can never take back, that people will talk about decades from now as an example of a horrific injustice. And that is the thing that haunts me and haunts everybody who is involved in this case. is that we are going to execute somebody who's innocent and that there is not enough time left to convince the courts and to convince the Texas governor and the Board of Pardons and Paroles that they have to stop this execution.
Latino USA reached out to Governor Greg Abbott and the Texas Board of Pardons and Paroles for comment, but we didn't hear back from them. Having a mother in prison has been difficult for the entire family. John, who back then was already living on his own, took in two of his siblings. His other six underage brothers and sisters were split and were placed with different foster parents before eventually being taken in by relatives.
It's sad because the division has gotten way worse now. Like, even siblings are against each other in this situation.
This rupture within the family extends beyond John and his siblings. Here's Melissa's sister, Diane Cerda.
Her children, they feel that we haven't been there for them. They feel that we, because we didn't take them in, that we don't love them. Because I've heard, you know, recently I've heard that they say that we're fake. They feel like we let them down because we didn't take them. We were grieving.
It's a pain Diane has to live with. Still, she has happy memories of Melissa that give her comfort.
You know, we were three girls. And the music that we liked is conjunto music because that's what we grew up hearing. And Melissa loved to dance, so I love to dance. So yeah, I mean, there's a lot of memories.
But probably no one has had it harder than Melissa's mom, Esperanza.
My mom was always a happy person. She's got severe depression ever since Melissa got incarcerated. Her health for the past 4 years has just gone downhill. My mom doesn't walk on her own anymore. She doesn't do anything. She doesn't want to smile. She says, "Don't try to make me laugh."
The family only recently told Esperanza there's a date for Melissa's execution.
It took us about 2 weeks to tell her. And she just broke out in tears and crying, and why my daughter? And, you know.
During a recent press conference, as part of their media tour to defend Melissa, Esperanza was able to speak briefly.
She's not guilty. She's my daughter. And she's not guilty of what they're saying she is guilty of. And if you have children, hug them and tell them that you love them.
Esperanza gets emotional, and it's hard for her to finish her sentence. John then wraps his arm around his grandmother to comfort her. They are determined to continue to fight to the end for Melissa.
Wish we could be a big, happy family again, because when we were, and my mother was out here, like, the holidays were the best thing that we had. It was a party, you know what I'm saying? Like, it was so cool.
Sometimes we get frustrated, you know, hearing people talk and say this and that. Everybody has a right to their own opinion. Until you walk those shoes, you can't say, okay, well, she's guilty or she did it, because you don't know. I mean, my sister, I stand behind her 110%.
She has an incredible faith in God, so that keeps her going. She put me on her execution list. So, you know, if worse comes to worse, I'll have to make a decision. Will I be with her till the end, meaning that I'll be there when she dies? I still have not made that decision, but I might.
I'm not going to say I wouldn't love her if she was guilty. I mean, she's my mother and I love her no matter what. But I wouldn't be fighting for her right now if I knew 100% that she was guilty and she's not. I mean, I just want people, like, believe in her innocence. I mean, to get a deeper look into it. And if they do, I mean, to do it soon, because time is running out.
On March 22nd, a petition was filed for clemency on behalf of Melissa Lucio with Governor Greg Abbott of Texas and with the Texas Board of Pardons and Paroles. If granted, Melissa Lucio could be removed from death row. For now, her execution by lethal injection remains scheduled for April 27th.
I often think about my daughter, Mariah. I've had a lot of dreams about her. I've dreamed that her and I are out there and that she's running around in her little dress. You know, it's hard to have dreams about your children because when you wake up and then you see where you're at, you wish that it wouldn't have been a dream, that it would have been reality. There are days that I feel that I could just leave this place and be reunited with Mariah and just tell her I'm sorry that I wasn't there to protect her.
This episode was produced by Reynaldo Leaños Jr. and Victoria Estrada. It was edited by Andrea Lopez Cruzado and mixed by Julia Caruso and Stephanie LeBeau. Special thanks to Sabrina Van Tassel for letting us use clips from her documentary, The State of Texas versus Melissa. To learn more about Melissa Lucio's case, visit our website, latinousa.org. The Latino USA team includes Marta Martinez, Daisy Contreras, Mike Sargent, Julieta Martinelli, Patricia Zulbarán, Ginny Montalvo, Alejandra Salazar, and Julia Rocha, with help from Raúl Pérez. Our editorial director is Julio Ricardo Varela. Our associate engineers are Gabriela Baez and JJ Carubin. Our digital editor is Luis Luna. Our fellows are Elisa Baena, Monica Morales, and Andrew Viñales. Our theme music was composed by Zenia Rubinos. I'm your host and executive producer, Maria Hinojosa. Join us again on our next episode. And in the meantime, look for us on social media. And remember, no te vayas. Chao.
Latino USA is made possible in part by the Libra Foundation, the Chan Zuckerberg Initiative, and the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation.